the history of interaction between Christians and Muslims has been checkered, to say the least, from the Crusades on to today. You know, what where in history have there been, has there been evidence of a bridging of the gap in the past?
Of course, the checkered history goes back even beyond the Crusades. Right from the beginning, the emergence of the Islamic community in a predominantly Christian Middle East brought a lot of challenges. So right from the beginning, Christians and Muslims have experienced many challenges in the relationships with one another. It's also noteworthy that right from the beginning, there were Christians as well as Muslims who worked very energetically in dialogical interaction on faith commitments and in bridge building. One of the outstanding presenters was John of Damascus, who worked within the courts of the caliph as a significant officer and a devout Christian, and would have quite occasional public dialogues with the Muslim leadership. And these were widely acclaimed and listened to. So there's been efforts at building bridges right from the beginning, but the interaction between the two communities also has been fraught with very special challenges, which we need to keep reviewing and addressing in our attempt to build positive relations.
Obviously, one of those challenges has been recent in the recent past, from 9/11 on to the involvement of the U.S. in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I guess even beyond that, in a contemporary sense, in the Middle East. How has the relationship evolved since then, and has there been even a deepening of suspicions within, say, the last year, 2 years, 3 years?
Yes, there has been a deepening of suspicions. We all grieve about what happened at 9/11. After that event, the leadership of Muslim nations met and pled for an effort to meet with Western leaders to try to work together at addressing the core issues and seeing if peace-building bridges could be developed. Since then, things, of course, have moved in directions which give a lot of us a lot of concern. You know, in the midst of all of that, I'm amazed at the many open doors I personally experienced, as well as many other, both Muslims and Christians, in attempting to build bridges, not in a way that softens the issues, but that really seeks to address the issues. Just recently, for example, I was invited to Iran to address an assembly of Muslim theologians, I and two other evangelical North American theologians invited to Iran, and addressed an assembly of perhaps 1,500 Islamic theologians from around the world. And when I commenced my address, I said, I am committed to building bridges of peace between our two communities. Shortly, I'll be meeting with Christian leadership in Central Asia, and then evangelical leadership in North America from across the North American continent. May I take your greetings? And all over that vast throng, these Muslim theologians were waving their hands to take greetings to the Christian communities. So there are many signs of hope. But we need to work energetically at building these bridges.
It's interesting because the American image of Iran is a place where tolerance of other religions doesn't take place.
Well, there's thriving churches in Iran, of course, as is true within Islamic societies. They are circumscribed. They work within some restrictions, and yet in the midst of all of that, they are flourishing, the churches. I worshipped in one congregation in Tehran with 600 people packing it out, and joyous songs just filling that auditorium with praises to God and His grace in Christ.
You mentioned that you had visited briefly with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the head of Iran. How do you assess the efforts of leaders in the Middle East and Iran and the leaders in the United States as far as trying to smooth over difficulties in the relationship between the Western world and the Muslim world?
Yeah. The issues run very deep, and I guess I wouldn't use the word smooth over, but I would use the word address and attempt to find the way forward as we address the issues. As you know, the president of Iran sent a letter to President Bush in May, the first ever communication, as I understand, between an Iranian government and the U.S. in 27 years. It was an 18-page letter in which he said, we both believe in revelation, and we both believe in the prophets, and the prophets and the revelation of our scriptures calls on us to live justly and righteously, and could we engage in conversation about what that would mean to work in the international arena as leaders committed to justice and righteousness? Would like to talk with you about that. And that letter, of course, as far as I know, I don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but the public response was that the letter has no substance, and so there was no response, as far as we know, publicly, to that invitation from the Iranian president. And so when I was in Iran, I was praying that if God wanted me to meet the president, he would bring about the possibility, which seemed highly, highly unlikely. And when he addressed this opening assembly of this theological community that I was also invited to address, he had a one-hour presentation. Of course, mine was much, much shorter and a smaller audience because many had left when the president finished his address. But after his one-hour address, behold, he sat right in front of me. And so I turned to a couple of my Muslim cleric friends sitting behind me and said, if it's appropriate, I would like to have a word with him. And as soon as the meeting was dismissed, they took me by the shoulders and elbowed their way to the front, and there I was standing in front of him. And I said, I gave him a dialogue that I had written with a Muslim some years ago, and said, I think you would find this interesting. And then I said, if there's any way we as Christian leadership can help to facilitate the conversation that you invited in your letter to President Bush, let us know. And he said, thank you. I will be in New York. I will meet you then. And unfortunately, I was in Central Asia when he was in New York, but thank God he did meet with some 50 Christian leadership when he was in New York to try to further the conversation.
Now, the administration, the president himself, has made overtures, public overtures, to the Muslim community in the United States. How effective do you think that's been?
I think that's very, very important and very significant. Yeah, no, that is extremely important.
Where do we go from here, then?
Continue the conversation. And we need to continue the conversation in ways that do address the issues. I believe very deeply that as we meet one another in trust-building relationships that address the issues, that we are not alone, that the Spirit of God is also at work to try to build bridges of understanding and respect. And that's my deep commitment.
Anything else to add?
God knows where it will take us.
One other question I sort of had on the side is there a difference between Shia Muslims and Sunni Muslims on how they view the relationship with Christianity?
Interesting question.
Are the divisions of certainly along other lines?
Well, both the Shia and the Sunnis, you know, the Quran is highly respectful of Christians. Christians in the Quran are referred to as the best friends of the Muslims, mm-hmm. and the closest in the faith to the Muslims. And in fact, the Quran commands the Prophet Muhammad to ask Christians what the scriptures say, and they will be helpful. There's, of course, also warnings that Christians may deceive us and may attempt to detract us from our faith. So you also have those warnings. But by and large, there's a great respect for Christians within the Quran. And that provides a foundation for relationship building. And that's true of both the Sunnis and the Shias. I mean, both, when we as Christians walk with humility and respectfulness, it's amazing the doors that are open. Not always, but most often. Now, in regards to the Shia, of course, have a martyr history, a history of suffering, which has been built into their theological DNA. So they tend to empathize, I think, with Christian communities that are suffering Christian communities in ways that sometimes open doors for suffering Christian communities to have special relationships with the Shia. You might be aware I'm with the Mennonite Church, and the Anabaptists have experienced suffering over the years. Our history was born in suffering. And some of the Shia Muslims in Iran note that and say that this is one of the reasons we particularly welcome this dialogue with Anabaptists, because you and us both understand something about suffering, which is very interesting.